Cheer up, Brian. You know what they say? Some things in life are bad. They can really make you mad. Other things just make you swear and curse. When you're chewing on life's gristle, don't grumble, give a whistle. And this'll help things turn out for the best. Always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the light side of life. If life seems jolly rotten, there's something you've forgotten, and that's to laugh and smile and dance and sing. When you're feeling in the dumps, don't be silly chumps. Just purse your lips and whistle, that's the thing. And always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the bright side of life. For life is quite absurd, and death's the final word. You must always face the curtain with a bow. Forget about your scene, give the audience a grin. Enjoy it, it's your life, chance anyhow. So always look on the bright side of death. Just before you draw your terminal breath. Life's a piece of shit when you look at it. Life's a laugh and death's a joke, it's true. You'll see it's all a show. Keep on laughing as you go. Just remember that the last laugh is on you. And always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the right side of life.
Don't give up.
Always look on.
That's right. That's what I keep telling the alt left. Look on the bright side. This is the 17th of August, 2017. It's a terrible time. You're in the bunker where we have lots of laughs. Oh boy, I'll tell you. Now, as you know or may not know, I do a lot of twittering. I'm twittering almost as much as, or maybe more than, the Great White Father. So if you're not checking out my Twitters, you're missing a lot of the program. Here's a sample of some of my twits in the last couple of days. I am supposedly the most dangerous racist in America, and I never even supported Trump. I need a map of where every Martin Luther King statue is in the United States. It was interesting watching all those non-haters filled with love trying to beat the brains out of somebody they disagreed with. Don't you realize you're being conned? The real white racist separatists have anything to do with the mess only morons and opportunists? Let me do that again. I didn't do that right. Don't you realize that you're being conned? The real white racial separatists don't have anything to do with this mess. Only morons and opportunists do. There, finally got that out. Why doesn't the press demand the names of the groups representing the alt-left, the non-permit holders? The public might get a better idea if they knew what was going on. Why aren't these social revolutionaries dismantling Goldman Sachs and the other big banks as the real enemy of the working class? Alt-right, wise up, if that's possible. Stay home. Don't make a target of yourself and let the creeps riot and burn down the town on their own excuse. I had to squeeze some of these. You only get one sentence, one and a half sentence, so sometimes I have to squeeze them in there. Alt-right, if you really love your hero, Mr. Trump, why do you keep screwing him up? Are you false flag? Alt-right, alt-left, make a truce. One group tears down half the Federal Reserve building and the other tears down the other half. That's a sample of some of the tweets today that I put out. So if you're not checking Tommy's tweets out, you're missing the show. Well, Tyler D.R. McGill, an employee with the University of Virginia's Alderman Library, suffered a stroke Tuesday that may be related to injuries he sustained in the violent melee with white supremacists on the university's lawn Friday night, a friend of his family confirmed Wednesday. Mr. McGill was admitted around 10 a.m. Tuesday to the university's medical center, where doctors found that his carotid artery was partially dissected, causing a... Just a minute here. What did it cause? Causing a clot that resulted in a stroke. Mr. McGill's wife confirmed to the Chronicle through a family friend. Doctors at the medical center suspected that the stroke is a result of a blunt force trauma to the neck, the source told the Chronicle. Well, that's what happens when you get into brawls, and it's too bad because he's a good-looking white man, but there's a lot of good-looking white men and women, of course, involving themselves in the alt-left. Mr. McGill works in the university library as a liaison with Ivy Stacks, UVA's off-site shelving facility. He drew attention when a video surfaced recently in which he followed Jason Kessler, an organizer of the Unite the Right rally, as state police escorted Mr. Kessler away from a press conference outside Charlottesville City Hall. Mr. McGill called Mr. Kessler responsible for the deaths of Heather D. Heyer, a 32-year-old woman who was fatally struck by an out-of-the-way vehicle that rammed into a crowd of counter-protesters. I always told you, we got to ban cars, you know, guns and cars. Her name was Heather Jason, Mr. McGill can be heard saying, raising his arms in the air as he follows Mr. Kessler down the sidewalk. Her blood is on your hands. Her blood is on your hood. If Mr. McGill's injuries are linked to the violence Friday, it could raise further questions about whether the university and the law enforcement put people at risk by failing to be more proactive and forceful in response to a gathering of hundreds of white nationalists carrying torches, tiki torches, and chanting racial epithets on Virginia's historic grounds. The march descended into chaos as the group surrounded a statue of Thomas Jefferson, where they had a confrontation with about 20 protesters. Well, there you go. He got into it, and he got hurt. And who knows? He may die. All left, that's a warning. And all right, that's a warning. Because when you get into these brawls, and believe me, I've been in them, anything can happen. I wonder if old George Soros paid the bail on the people that were arrested that were alt-left. I haven't heard anything about that. I do know that none of the statues that were attacked and destroyed, the cops didn't arrest anybody. Now, do you think if you went downtown and found a statue on the city mall and put a rope around it and brought it down, the cops wouldn't haul you away and get you for several bad things? No, they let them have it. The cops let that riot go on, and they let all that property damage go on. The cops did, so they had orders. They had orders. Leave it alone. Now, why would that be? Well, your guess is as good as mine. But it wasn't an accident, I know that. So if it wasn't an accident, who gave the order? Why did they give the order? And when the cops left the riot? Jeez. Yeah, not many people want to ask that question. I guess that was a stroke of luck for Kessler, that the guy wasn't able to beat him up because he had a stroke. Here's some more business from the Southern Millionaires Center down there in Georgia. They're talking about these monuments and when they were built. You know, that's another thing, boys and girls. You know as well as I do, no one gave a shit about those monuments before this eruption, and they can be used as a political tool. I mean, all they were good for was for the pigeons to shit on. And how many white Southerners, so-called Confederate supporters, did you ever see sitting in front of one of these statues contemplating what a wonderful guy he was, that particular guy? People ignored those statues. They didn't care about them. They just walked by them and pigeon shit on them like that. It's sort of disingenuous for these right-wingers down south to all of a sudden get all upset about these monuments. They didn't before. They didn't even care whether they existed. Most whites didn't even know they existed. I remember that time, and I think I mentioned this before. I was down there working with David Duke, and there's a monument down there called the White Monument, dedicated to the men and women that fought off the carpetbaggers in the federal building down there in New Orleans. And they threatened to take it down, and we all went down there. We're going to stop that stuff. And evidently we did, because they didn't tear it down. But before that, who would know where the White Monument even was? I doubt whether David Duke even knew about it until somebody wrote an article in the paper. So anyhow, that's a little tidbit I wanted to pass on there about all this jumping up and down about monuments that nobody gave a shit about, and all of a sudden they're holy grail. I believe in being truthful and honest and right to the core. Anyhow, let's see here. Civil War, 1861 to 1865. Reconstruction Era, 1865 to 1875. Let's see here. I've got to get to my point here before you go to sleep. 1875 to 1895, Reconstruction Era ends. Blacks are steadily disenfranchised, which means whites got their rights back, allowing Southern whites to enact Jim Crow laws. I feel sorry for that Jim Crow. I think the Jim Crow laws were fine. They had to be to keep the races separated. It was all they had, was the Jim Crow laws. In 1896, Jim Crow is cemented into place when the Supreme Court rules it constitutional. Segregation. Yeah. That was back when we had a decent Supreme Court. 1895 to 1915, when blacks disenfranchised the Jim Crow laws safely in place, Southern whites begin a campaign of terror against blacks. Lynching skyrocketed. The KKK becomes resurgent. Oh, man. And whites begin building Confederate statues and monuments in large numbers. Well, yeah, when you win something, you build a statue. But I don't agree with the people a lot of times they build a statue of, because they have a checkered background. I would not have supported slavery or bringing one black into continental United States. That, to me, was a crime, a race crime, sort of a war crime. Those slave ships should have been confronted at the dock and told to get your ass out of here and take your niggers back to Africa and don't let one of them off, and proceed to mechanize, which they later did, and bring white workers in from the North and Europe. They say they wouldn't work under those conditions. That's bullshit. Whites have worked under every condition, even slavery. 1915 to 1955, Jim Crow reigned safely throughout the South. That was a period of pretty much happiness in the South, the white South. 1955 to 1970, the civil rights era starts after the Supreme Civil Rights, civil wrongs, after the Supreme Court ruled in Brown versus Board of Education that Jim Crow laws are unconstitutional. They should never be unconstitutional in a white nation, because the white nation is the white nation. But you see, we were saddled with these niggers that entrepreneurs and wealthy people had brought into this country to use as slaves to the detriment of the white working class, really. The white working class, or there was almost no middle class in the South. Why would they be? As long as you got slaves and the master capitalist lives up in the big house on the hill. Southern whites mount massive and violent resistance and started putting up Confederate monuments again. That was after the civil rights thing. Well, they should have, but they should have gone a lot farther. There should have been a post-Civil War, or an insurrection at least. Yes, these monuments were put up to honor Confederate leaders, but the timing of the monument building makes it pretty clear that the real motivation was to physically symbolize white terror against poor black people that never done anything to anybody. They were mostly built during times when Southern whites were engaged in vicious campaigns of subjugation against blacks. I'm sure they did. Of course they did. I admit that. You can't deny that. But if they'd never been brought here, or they'd been returned after the Civil War, you wouldn't have all this problem we have today. And during these campaigns, the message sent by a statue of Robert E. Lee in front of the courthouse was loud and clear to black people. Yeah, that's probably it. No one should think that these statues were meant to be a somber postbellum reminder of a brutal war. Why not? They were built much later, and most of them were explicitly created to accompany organized and violent efforts to subdue blacks. I call that keeping the blacks in the proper position and maintain white supremacy in the South. Well, to maintain white leadership in the South. Of course, that's what it was for. I wouldn't be surprised if even a lot of Southerners don't really understand this, but they should learn. There's a reason blacks consider these statues to be symbols of bigotry and terror. It's because they are. Well, partially I can agree with that, but we white people have brought it on ourselves by allowing the ruling class to do too much ruling. Like I said, Robert E. Lee was a symbol and a general supporting the agrarian capitalism in the South. This was not good for white working people, but too many white working people today look at things sort of screwballish, especially in the South, where they revere all these people like they had no faults. Well, Lincoln sure had plenty of faults, and all those generals that were under Lincoln, they all had a lot of faults, so that's the name of the game. But the main fault was not that they were keeping the races separate and keeping the whites in a superior position. That was not the fault of these people that they made statues of. In fact, a lot of these generals who retired after the Civil War became quite liberal. Yeah, they did. Now, you look upon Nathan Bedford Forrest as one of the great generals of the war, which he was. But after the war, he became very liberal, even wanted to bring more blacks in from Africa to compete with white working people. Read about him. Look into that about Nathan Bedford Forrest. He became a hell of a liberal after the war. He was more interested in killing white Federals, troops, than he really was doing anything against the blacks, because he was a slave owner, and that was his property, and he wanted to keep it. And he'd kill any white man from the North that tried to take those niggers away from him. The president has appointed Hope Hicks, and she has accepted the position, according to the White House insider. That's a media representative or something like that. Hicks has been close by the Trump side since the early days of the campaign and is one of his most trusted staffers. She has been serving as on the press team in more of the behind-the-scenes role as director of strategic communications, and I question whether Trump may be having some fun with her. It's just my opinion. Trump sure could have saved himself some trouble by just doing that a couple of months ago, but the update is this. Hicks is getting the job only on an interim basis while the White House searches for a permanent replacement for that little Sicilian nut he put in before. You know, Trump can't be that smart, putting people like Scaramucci in, stuff like that. He definitely has some, I don't know how to say it. I think he's a little nuts myself. These left-wingers are saying that Trump defends Nazi torch mob. Now they're a Nazi torch mob. I doubt whether 1 in 20 of those people were people who really adhered to National Socialism and marched with those torches. But now they're Nazi torch mob. Steal one chicken and you're banned for life. See Obama boy? He's getting back into the picture by sending out tweets. And the people just love those Obama tweets. What is this negrophilia? What is this thing about the whites and the niggers? How did that all come about? Where they just love them, just worship them. Gotta have them around, man. I wonder if it was like that back after the Civil War or before. If they tried to take the niggers out and take them back to Africa, probably the whites would have started a war over it. You can't take them back, man. We love them. We got them in the big house up there, those house niggers. We love those people. We don't love you, you poor white working man. Well, that's true. The idle rich have always despised their unfortunate brothers and sisters who didn't have much money and didn't have much education. They've always despised us. But they can love the nigger because he is serving their interests more fully. Steve Bannon is an interesting character, and most of you haven't read a lot about him, but he has had a hell of a checkered past. On Tuesday night, while Gary Cohn was fuming about President Trump's latest comments, Steve Bannon was excitedly telling friends and associates that the globalists were in mass freak-out mode. That sounds like Fatty Boy. I used to catch the Breitbart radio show, you know, now and then. Sometimes more now than then. And it was obvious that these guys were certainly not in our camp, because they proclaimed it every day how they were not racial at all. And they had all these Jews working for them. And so the left wing calling Steve Bannon a big racist is a joke. Now, he may be racist for his own description, his own whites, the whites that he really likes. But that's the strange thing about these white people in power. They can be very racist against certain people they don't like and be totally in love with all the rest. So you can't trust them. Steve Bannon's probably going to leave the cabinet, leave the administration, which doesn't bother me a bit. Maybe it'll encourage him to be more racist and more non-apologetic for being racist. Guys always want a way out to where they can say, well, no, I'm not a racist, you know. My cook is a nigger, you know, that type of stuff. I go to nigger ball games. I can't be a racist. Anyhow, if these kind of people are racist, like the alt-left say, they're very strange racists. Both Trump and Bannon are of one mind, and within the White House, at least, there is a minority view. They saw the backlash to Charlottesville as an example of political correctness run amok and instinctively searched for their people in that group of protesters. Bannon has told the associates that Trump on Tuesday afternoon took it to the next level for the country by asking, where does it end? He especially loved Trump's line, I wonder, is it George Washington's next week? No, it's probably going to be Franklin Delano Roosevelt, if I had anything to say about it. And there's a lot of those New Dealers out there that need to have their statues pulled down. Even though I can't condemn everything that happened that helped the white working class during Roosevelt's administrations, but there's plenty of statues to pull down. Pull them all down. We need the scrap iron for making bombs to drop on the Arabs. Yeah. Which means that racism has a very checkered definement in this country. To some people, to say anything is racist. You know, other people, you can say anything, and it's racist. So, you know, it's funny. After reading a lot of internal stuff in the White House and what people are saying, it's my understanding and my opinion that something's going to happen to Trump. They're going to get rid of him one way or another. So I don't think he's going to be around to fill out his 4 years, because they're going after him big time now. And a lot of his base are falling away too. Well, two lone wolfers over in Catalonia ran a big truck or car into a crowd of people and killed. I guess they only killed one, but they injured about 20. This is going to be the new normal from here on in, all this kind of stuff. And I could have predicted, and I did predict it a long time ago. I remember once saying in an interview, you know, even a refrigerator can be a weapon if you can pick it up. Ever wonder what this Antifa is about? You hear on these people that are so-called Antifa, they're in the riots. Where did it come from? Militant Anti-Fascist, or Antifa, is a radical pan-leftist politics of social revolution applied to fighting the far right. Its adherents are predominantly communists, socialists, and anarchists who reject turning to the police or the state to halt the advance of white supremacy. Instead, they advocate popular opposition to fascism, as we witnessed in Charlottesville. I don't think what they think fascism fits very much Mussolini's idea of fascism. There are Antifa groups around the world, but Antifa is not itself an interconnected organization any more than an ideology like socialism or a tactic like the picket line is a specific group. Antifa are autonomous, anti-racist groups that monitor and track the activities of local neo-Nazis. They don't seem to track the workings of the military-industrial complex much. They want to go after the low-hanging fruit. They expose them to their neighbors and employers. They conduct public education campaigns. They support migrants, illegal aliens, and refugees, possible terrorists, and they pressure venues to cancel white power events. Big deal. That is so chicken shit. But it works because they don't get anything coming back. There's no pushback against these people. The right wing doesn't push back. It just reacts and cries and snivels. Yeah, there's ways of neutralizing this kind of problem. We used to do it. They would expose one of our guys. We'd follow them home and find out who they work for and screw them up. The vast majority of anti-fascist organizing is nonviolent. Yeah, blah, blah, blah. But their willingness to physically defend themselves, blah, 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 and other from white supremacist violence, it's everywhere, it's on every street corner, there's violence. And preemptively shut down fascist organizing efforts before they turn deadly, distinguishes them from liberal anti-racists. Well, I think I wish a lot of these alt-right people would stay home because they don't know tactics and they don't know too much what they're doing, and they just play into the hands of these people. There's much better ways of going against these people than that. Of course, it's the simple logic to it is you go after their meetings. They have meetings all the time and rallies. And if you want to really get it on, that's where to go. You don't call your own rally. You go to their rally. Yeah. And if they don't swing on you, just stand there and listen. But if they swing on you, it's Katie bar the door shut. There's a man under the bed. Anti-fascists argue that after the horrors of chattel slavery, and of course chattel slavery included, and then it morphed into wage slavery, which included all the white people, white working people. So once they got rid of chattel slavery, wage slavery was next on the list. They don't talk about that too much. And the Holocaust, the H word, physical violence against white supremacists, is both ethically justifiable and strategically effective. Well, turnabout's fair play, boys. If they say it's moral and legal to attack you and beat your brains out, well, I think it's just the same way with them. It's just the way it's got to be. But I'm not waiting on the alt-right to pull that off, and I don't know of anybody else at this time that's prepared to do it. We should not, they argue, abstractly assess the ethical status of violence in the absence of the values and context behind it. Say what? Instead, they put forth an ethically consistent, historically informed argument for fighting Nazis before it's too late. That's a cool concept. when anybody comes up with an idea that you think might be not good for you, you kill them. Guess where that's leading us? As Cornel West, Negro, explained after surviving neo-Nazis' attacks in Charlottesville, "If I hadn't been for the anti-fascists protecting us from the neo-fascists, we would have been crushed like cockroaches." Well, there you go. Alt-right, there's a message for you. But what if the alt-right had killed every anti-fascist there? What would have changed? Nothing would have changed. That's the problem with this stuff. You know, there's plenty of war criminals and so forth that you can go after. But having a victory, even killing all these anti-fascists, would not change things hardly at all, if at all. Because they are the minimum, small enemy, not the big enemies. The big enemies are, well, you know who they are. You should know who they are. You better know who they are. Though anti-Antifa are often treated as a new force in American politics since the rise of Trump, and who's behind that, the anti-fascist tradition stretches back a century. The first anti-fascists fought Benito Mussolini's black shirts in the Italian countryside. They didn't win that, did they? There's a book called, I'm trying to remember, I think I still got it in my library, about the great fascist fighters in Italy that went out and found the Reds and did them in. Exchange fire with Adolf Hitler's brown shirts in the taverns and alleyways of Munich, which didn't get him very far, and defended Madrid from Francisco Franco's insurgent nationalist army. How did they do with that? Beyond Europe, anti-fascism became a model of resistance for the Chinese against the Japanese imperialism during World War II and resistance to Latin American dictatorships.
He's got America. But there are guys who stay up nights figuring out how to take that away from him.
I happen to know the facts. Now, friends, I'm just an average American. But I'm an American-American. And some of the things I see in this country of ours make my blood boil. I see people with foreign nationality. I see Negroes holding jobs that belong to me and you. Now I ask you, if we allow this thing to go on, what's going to become of us real Americans? We'll never be able to call this country our own until it's a country without. Without what? Without Negroes. Without alien foreigners. Without Catholics. Without Freemasons. You know these things.
What's wrong with the Masons? I'm a Mason. Hey, that fella's talking about me.
These are your enemies. These are the people who are trying to take over our country. Now you know them. You know what they stand for. And it's up to you and me to fight them. Fight them and destroy them before they destroy us.
You were ready to agree with him. Well, yes, but he was talking about... What about those other people?
But in this country, we have no other people. We are American people.
What about you? You aren't American, right?
I was born in Hungary, but now I am an American citizen. And I have seen what this kind of talk can do. I saw it in Berlin, but I was a fool then. I thought Nazis were crazy people, stupid fanatics. But unfortunately, it was not so. They used prejudice as a practical weapon to cripple the nation. We human beings are not born with prejudices. Always they are made for us, made by someone who wants something. Remember that when you hear this kind of talk. Somebody is going to get something out of it, and it isn't going to be you.
Well, guess who put that out? The Washington Post. Clever piece of neo-Marxist propaganda put out probably prior to World War II in a black and white film, which has some truth to it, of course, but much of it was soft core porn Marxism. They always play that same route. Sounds sort of cute on paper, but once your country's overrun with hordes from all over the world, you'll find out what happens. Let's listen to some more of this stuff. Modern Antifa politics can be traced to resistance to waves of xenophobia. Why don't they just say racism? And the emergence of white power skinhead culture in Britain in the 70s and 80s. It also has roots in self-defense groups organized by revolutionaries and migrants in Germany as the fall of the Berlin Wall unleashed a violent neo-Nazi backlash. In the United States and Canada, activists of the Anti-Racist Action Network, which I have fought in the streets, doggedly pursued Klansmen, neo-Nazis. Let's see here. And other assorted white supremacists from the late 1980s into the 2000s. Yeah, they attacked us, and we attacked back, and we beat the shit out of them, too. We were the only ones standing for a length of time, especially in California. We were the only ones standing against them and the John Brown Anti-Klan Committee and all those people. We drove them out of business. They used to have a big headquarters in San Diego. And after we beat them in the streets several times, they closed up shop. Their motto was simply but bold, quote, "We go where they go." Well, they never went very many times where I was. If Nazi skinheads handed out leaflets at a punk show in Indiana, how about Hitler was right? ARA was there to show them the door. Boy, this is real propaganda bullshit. Maybe once in a while they pulled it off, but most of the time they didn't. If fascists plastered downtown Alberta's Edmonton with racist posters, ARA tore them down and replaced them with anti-white racist stuff. Responding to a small fascist groups may seem trivial to some, but the rise of Hitler and Mussolini show that resistance is not a light switch that can be simply flipped on in a crisis. Once the Nazis and fascist parties gained control of the government, it was too late to pull the emergency brake. Yeah. In retrospect, anti-fascists have concluded it would have been much easier to stop Mussolini back in 1919, which they tried to do when he switched to fascism from straight socialism. They tried to kill him. When his first fascist nucleus had 100 men, or to stamp out the far-right German Workers' Party, which had only 54 members, when Hitler attended his first meeting. They had less than that. They only had about less than 10 before he transformed it into the National Socialist German Workers' Party. Though the regimes that inspired their original protests are long dead, anti-fascists have devoted themselves to treating small fascist and Nazi groups as if they could be the nucleus of a murderous movement or regime of the future, which gives them license to kill. So watch it. And if they try to kill you, kill them. For years, anti-fascists have been maligned and insulted for treating groups of 40 to 60 Klansmen or fascists with the utmost of seriousness. Members of a 10-year-old Rose City Antifa of Portland, Oregon, the country's oldest currently existing Antifa group, confronted criticism even from the left for devoting themselves to unmasking and exposing the activities of small groups of local racists, Islamophobes, and fascists rather than focusing on more large-scale systematic injustice. Yeah, that Portland, Oregon, that's a place to behold. The crime rate is soaring in Portland, just like I predicted. And guess who's committing most of it? Years before the alt-right even had a name, anti-fascists were spending thankless hours scouring seedy message boards and researching clandestine neo-Nazi gatherings. They were tracking those who planted the seeds of death that we all witnessed in Charlottesville. Agree or disagree with their methods, the anti-Tifa who devote themselves to combating racism, wonderful guys, are in no way equivalent to the alt-right trolls who joke about gas chambers. Behind the mask, Antifa are nurses, teachers, neighbors, and relatives of all races, and just plain wonderful people and gender who do not hesitate to put themselves on the line to shut down fascism by any means possible. One of the big problems is the misinterpretation and so forth of fascism. That's actually a World War II idea, and they need new names. They try to use these World War II names as a shortcut in propaganda, which is a waste of time. It should not have taken the murder of Heather Heyer for so many of us, especially white people, to take seriously the threat of white power as it plagued communities of color for generations. Wow. Wow. That's enough of that stuff. What is the Black Bloc? Black Bloc is a protest tactic used by leftist anti-fascist action or Antifa groups. Unlike most protesters, the Black Bloc rejects the concept of nonviolence. Most wear black and cover their faces to maintain anonymity and avoid arrest. And then this training film shows the tactics that the Black Bloc use, which they show windows broken out in department stores and the anarchist symbol painted on the walls. Black Bloc style protests probably started in Germany in the 1970s.
I have read and I have been questioned since I've been here about certain demonstrations against my coming. If they should have the kind of government they apparently seek, no one would ever be able to do what they're doing again.
So they gave Reagan some trouble back in his day. Black Bloc tactics were first seen on a wide scale in 1999 at the World Trade Meeting. I think that was, of course, Seattle.
Last night we had over 4,000 peaceful protesters making their opinions known on the streets of our city. But we also had some anarchists.
They say that Antifa is more interested in theatrics and property destruction, which is true. They're real proud of the video of these guys cold-cocking Richard Spencer when he was outside giving a press conference, which he should have known better, and that's why these alt-rights are babe in the woods with this stuff. And they don't listen to the old-timers. They don't listen to me. And so they continually get their ass kicked. The number of Antifa protesters has, or warriors, has grown recently amid the rise of the alt-right movement. Isn't that interesting how magically that's happened? It's almost like a stage play. It's almost like they're using the alt-right to create and amplify a large army of these people across the country, and they're using the alt-right and other targets to do it, because if they didn't have those targets, what would they do? They just have to destroy property, and people would get tired of that, even though they already are destroying property. And to fight them, if you have to fight them, you have to fight them from a lone wolf position. You can't go out there and stick your head in their face like that. You have to be smart, because they feed on sneaking up on you like they did Richard Spencer and cold cocking him. Yeah, that gives them, boy, they'll recruit a lot of people because plenty of people want to do that to a lot of people. Now, you notice that most of these actions, nobody goes to jail. Or if they go to jail, they're let loose the next day. You notice that? Do you think there's a connection there with the system? There's people in the system that want certain things to happen, so they're setting it up? I think so. Because tear down statues, attack people in public, and nobody's arrested. Or they're given their hands get slapped, maybe. They're out to build a, whatever you want to call it, army in this country. And it's going to get to guns and so forth as time goes on. So you better be ready for it, boys and girls. And to go out there and stick your head in their face is stupid. They're mainly strong when they're in a group. They're not strong when they're not in a group. Most of these guys are pencil-necked geeks. They get vicious when they put on a mask and so forth and go out in the public. So you can find them individually walking around. You can ID them. And you can do what you want to do or not do. Now, that was from a video.
Wait a minute.
Now, that was almost a recruiting poster for the system. Washington Post put it out. Very first-rate recruiting video. Why would the Washington Post, that's owned by billionaires, be putting training films together for radical Marxists and so forth? Why would they be doing that? Think about that. But that's what they're doing. They're helping build this army to use against anybody they don't like. And that is coming from the wealthy class. Yeah, that's coming from the wealthy class, not the poor people. They'll recruit a lot of poor people to get their heads beat in and get bloody. But that's not who is running this thing. And I don't think it's George Soros either. I mean, he may contribute a little money, but why don't the Koch brothers really get out there and finance the alt-right? I don't know. Maybe they are, but I don't know anything about it. You see anybody of means trying to build a counterpoint to this? To build a right-wing army in the streets? Do you see any of that? I don't see any of that. Oh, Steve Bannon is supposed to be such a racist, and here he quotes, "Losers and a collection of clowns" are the words Trump's chief strategist used about alt-right. Oh, that's interesting, isn't it, for the so-called racist. He didn't have to go that far. He could have just parried it off and say, "I got nothing to say," but no. "The alt-right are losers and a collection of clowns" are the words Trump's chief strategist used. How do you want to really get your head beat in for that kind of stuff? Following these kind of guys worshiping Trump? Now, this is the alt-right, a neo-Nazi who said he was ready for violence, quote, at a deadly rally in Charlottesville, Virginia, has released footage of himself crying after learning there is allegedly a warrant out for his arrest. Christopher Cantwell, who was followed during the gathering of neo-Nazis and KKK, white supremacists, and alt-right for a 22-minute documentary for Vice TV. Watch out for that outfit. I've tangled with them. Showed off his guns to journalist Ellie Reeve and boasted, quote, "I'm carrying a pistol. I go to the gym all the time. I'm trying to make myself more capable of violence," unquote. He told that to the media. However, in a mobile phone footage uploaded to YouTube on Wednesday, Cantwell said he was terrified after learning the police wanted to speak with him. Oh, that would get a big laugh out of my guys from the old days. Quote, "I've been told there's a warrant out for my arrest," he said on the video. "With everything that's happening, I don't think it's very wise for me to go anywhere. There's a state of emergency. The National Guard is here." Oh, man.
I contacted the local police. I called the Charlottesville Police Department, and I asked them, I said, I have been told that there's a warrant out for my arrest. And they said that they wouldn't confirm it, but that I could find this out if I, excuse me, that I could find this out if I wanted to go to a local magistrate or something like that. But with everything that's happening, I don't think it's wise for me to be, you know, going anywhere. There's a state of emergency. The National Guard is here. You know, so I don't think it's a good idea for me to go there, frankly. And I don't know what to do. I've emailed Stephen Tenney of the Keene Police Department. I have emailed Stephen Tenney of the Keene Police Department. He's one of the cops that came there. he's one of the cops who saved my ass when I had to pull my gun in Keene. And I emailed him and I said, I don't know what to do. I need guidance. I want to be peaceful. I want to be law-abiding. Okay, that was the whole entire point of this. And I'm watching CNN talk about this as violent white nationalist protests. We have done everything in our power to keep this peaceful. You know, I know we talk a lot of shit on the internet, right? But like literally, Jason Kessler applied for a permit like months ago for this. Okay, when they yanked our permit, we went to the ACLU and we went to court and we won. We've been coordinating with law enforcement the entire time. Every step of the way, we've tried to do the right thing. And they just won't stop, you know? We have done everything in our power. We have used every peaceful and lawful means by which to redress our grievances. And our enemies just will not stop. We've been fucking assaulted. They are threatening us all over the place. Chelsea Manning, this tranny fanatic, as a picture of himself, herself, talking about curb-stomping Nazis with a picture of his boot coming down on somebody. We are trying to make this peaceful. We are trying to be law-abiding. And our enemies will not stop. What options do we have left? If somebody would like to inform me of that, then I will be grateful to you. I really will. I guess that's basically it. I don't know what else to say. You know what? I'll just say it here. 631-791-5842. If law enforcement wants me to turn myself in or they want to know my location, all they have to do is call that number, okay? And if we can set up a means of communication where I can verify that you're the police, I will go to the police station or wherever you tell me to go, or if I can confirm that you are in fact law enforcement, I will give you my location and I will let you come and get me. Okay, I'm armed. I do not want violence with you. All right, I'm terrified. I'm afraid you're going to kill me. I really am. All right, so just let's do this. However we need to do it. You know, if I got to go to jail today, you know, it won't be the fucking first time. All right. I don't want to. I don't think I should. I think I honestly believe that I've been law-abiding, and I've been engaged in violence. I have. There's no question about it. And I've done nothing to hide that. But it was done in defense of myself and others. And I would not have done it for any other reason. And by the way, if University of Virginia was not a gun-free zone and I had my pistol, I would have stayed far away from that goddamn melee, okay? When I do not have a weapon on me, I feel it necessary to stop threats before they get out of hand, okay? When I have my weapon, I'm cool as a cucumber, folks. I do not fucking fight with people. You would have heard about it by now, right? If I was a violent guy, you would have heard about it by now. Everybody in their mother wants to fucking ruin my life, okay? And if I wanted violence, it's not a difficult thing for a guy like me to find, okay? There we go. All right, maybe I'll be back later. I don't know. I'm sorry for anybody who's waiting on a live episode of Radical Agenda, but I think you can understand, you know, the situation I'm in. We'll go from there. All right. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks everybody. I'll try to keep you informed. Thanks.
Neo-Nazi Christopher Cantwell from the Charlottesville protest cries, sniveling and weeping, in a segment he posted today, August the 16th, in one of the most satisfying videos I think I've seen all day. Now, before I play that, you should know who he is. If you haven't seen the Vice special, let's just play a little clip of this, this charming man.
So when did you get into, as you said, the racial stuff?
When the Trayvon Martin case happened, you know, Michael Brown and Tamir Rice and all these different things happened, every single case, it's some little black asshole behaving like a savage, and he gets himself in trouble, shockingly enough. Whatever problems I might have with my fellow white people, they generally are not inclined to such behavior, and you know you got to kind of take that into consideration when you're thinking about how to organize your society.
In Oklahoma City.
Okay, so exactly, you have to go back to Oklahoma City to talk about a white act of terrorism.
Elliot Roger,
right?
Dylan Roof.
Okay, so now you've managed to name three people, and I'm pretty sure Elliot Roger wasn't explicitly white, by the way. But the thing is, you remember the names of white bombers and mass shooters, okay?
Yeah.
Can you tell me the name of all 19 hijackers on 9/11 off the top of your head? You can remember Dylan Roof's name. You can remember Tim McVeigh's name.
Whether white people were capable of violence.
I didn't say capable. Of course we're capable. I'm carrying a pistol. I go to the gym all the time. I'm trying to make myself more capable of violence. I'm here to spread ideas, talk, in the hopes that somebody more capable will come along and do that. Somebody like Donald Trump, who does not give his daughter to a Jew.
So Donald Trump, but like more racist.
A lot more racist than Donald Trump. I don't think that you could feel about race the way I do and watch that Kushner bastard walk around with that beautiful girl, okay?
Can you talk a little bit about the right adopting the politics or the political style of the left?
We don't have the camaraderie, we don't have the trust level that our rivals do. And that camaraderie and trust is built up through activism, and that is one of the tactics that we're adopting.
Okay. I know that you're probably already charmed, but if you want to watch the rest of it, I'll put it in the show notes. But let's just move on to the point where he actually is probably going to be arrested, and that's what he's sniveling about in this next visual threats.
We're supposed to do, trying to express opinions, and the criminals are over there getting their way. And that is a foundational problem in our society, and whatever you think of my opinions, that's going to be something that puts you in danger.
Yeah, and that is because this city is run by Jewish communists and criminal niggers. That's exactly what it is.
You're the true nonviolent protester.
I'm not even saying we're nonviolent. I'm saying that fucking we didn't aggress. We did not initiate force against anybody. We're not nonviolent. We'll fucking kill these people if we have to.
Now, let's watch the very same man, a mere 2 days later, recanting almost everything he said.
The local police. I called the Charlottesville Police Department, and I asked them, I said, I have been told that there's a warrant out for my arrest. And they said that they wouldn't confirm it, but that I could find this out if I, excuse me.
Well, there you have it, another great white hope warrior of the Aryan race. Talking big shit, threatening violence, carrying guns. But when it comes down to it, he's sniveling like a little baby. The men that went into these riots with me would cry their eyes out to hear this. No, they wouldn't cry their eyes out. They'd curse their eyes out. The alt-right is full of those kind of people. They don't have what it takes to go in the streets, and maybe that's good. They shouldn't go into the streets. And I don't think anybody, any white guy, should necessarily go into the streets because you don't know who you're dealing with. The cops are against you. And don't tell me they're not. The press are against you big time. The politicians are against you. It's all a big thing. You know, you're going to walk into that and get yourself totally screwed? No. There's another way to fight, and you're going to have to learn how to do it. But you don't need an army with you. I hope you try to forget this particular recording of this big talking Aryan warrior sniveling like a baby. Seen that same kind of stuff before. Big talking white guys that crumble when any kind of pressure is put on. You got to have a track record with somebody if you're going to walk around with them. you got to have a track record and know how they're going to respond in any particular situation. Otherwise, don't walk around with them. You're safer walking around by yourself. Robert Miles from Michigan, who many of you know, a great man, used to tell me, "You know why I don't have a bodyguard, Tom?" I said, "Why?" He said, "Because I'd have to save his ass." That's it for today. I'll be back tomorrow. Tomorrow is Freya's Day, Ladies' Day.
Doing the right thing. Because you have a steadiness about you. And I believe in you. But when it comes home, then you must be smarter than your enemy. What are you trying to say? Americans. They're very smart, but sometimes they can be incredibly stupid. They spend all this money and time and energy on the so-called war on terror. They put satellites up in space. They can ram a smart bomb up a camel's ass from a situation room 5,000 miles away. But every time the U.S. kills an Al-Qaeda leader, what happens? There's a new one before the body's cold. You do it a million times. They never get it because the real solution always eludes them. What is? Do nothing.
Nothing.
Nada. If you want to shut down a fundamentally flawed system, all you gotta do is step out of its way, and it'll shut itself down. Nature has a way of correcting itself.
This is the first thing you've got to understand. You've got to understand that, because otherwise you're going to be making recruiting posters for the opposition. They're going to play this till hell freezes over, this great Aryan warrior crying like a baby. You've got to play it differently than you have been playing it. And if you don't, you're going to become a victim of it. You're going to be helping to build their army. Their army, not your army.